League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The second and third best record teams in the NBA, you want to send a message and you play the best. And I thought we played great these last two games. Well, we want to win every game we're in. Doesn't matter who's out there. We just want to finish the year strong and not look ahead to the playoffs, even though it's hard to because everyone's eager to get there.
I mean, every game's different, but you don't let go of the rope. You know, whether you end up in a win or loss, you can't ever feel like you're out of it. You know, we have what it takes to win all sorts of ways.
They made shots. Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, you know, they all made tough shots. David West made shots. I thought they were pretty sharp in their cutting. They moved the ball better than we did.
One of the things that's happened since Durant went out is they have really locked down on defense and turned into a defensive monster. This injury has made the Warriors a better defensive team, and Durant is an excellent defensive player.
It's a big deal. Obviously, we're not there yet, but we're in a great position. If we're able to monitor minutes and maybe give a guy a night off or something and prepare for the playoffs, but we're not there yet.
Sorry, they're human. They go through so much every single day. So many obligations off the court that you don't know about. Family. There's so much going on. Sometimes away from it all. It might not be physical. It might just be a reset mentally. I get that. And I also get if I was a fan, I could afford to pick the tickets and I'm circling LeBron James or Steph Curry on my calendar or Russell Westbrook. I would want to see them play live. I'd be disappointed as well. But I see it from a fan perspective and a player perspective.
They know they can turn it on, and when Kyle Korver gets healthy, J.R. Smith's still coming back, Kevin Love's coming back. So as bad as they look right now, they're still coming back, and they're still the defending champs. Clearly, LeBron James has made a real point of saying, I'm fine. I don't need to rest. I mean, you saw him in San Antonio, and he said, I feel great. You know, if other guys need to rest, they need to go talk to coach about that. And then, you know, yesterday in Chicago at the end of practice, he was staying late and putting on his own personal dunk contest. I think the messaging from LeBron is, I'm not trying to taper my minutes.
When they get down in games, they have a habit where Kyrie and LeBron just put their head down and try to outscore the competition. That's been going on all year, and that's the kind of thing really super talented players do before that they learn that as a team, defense in the NBA is how you come back from being behind.
I just love what I saw from the Indians again this spring. They're going to have Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar back in their rotation. They're going to have Edwin Encarnacion in the middle of that lineup. And now it appears they might have Michael Brantley in left field on opening day. And those are four guys that basically didn't even play for them in the World Series last year, and they came this close to beating the Cubs. I think the Indians are the best team that I saw in the American League.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well then, how about that? That's an awful lot of grist for the mill, I think, to start our Thursday afternoon extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks for joining us 11 minutes after 3. We've got 1 hour and 49 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you. You want to be a part of this awesomeness, you got to call 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Frank Gargano is here. Jim Cushlin is here. We want you to be here. And boy, oh boy, were the Warriors there last night. Finally, a showdown between the NBA's top two records, certainly the top two teams in the West. Obviously, a showdown with everybody saying, okay, enough of the resting nonsense. Let's just play. And that's what they did last night. Kawhi Leonard riding high. The San Antonio Spurs going into the game last night against the Golden State Warriors with a 9-1 record against teams with the top five records in the NBA. 9-1. They've been rolling everybody that is anybody. But last night, they ran into a Golden State Warriors team that I think was very, very eager to send a very, very loud message on the road in San Antonio. The message that they wanted to send was, when we sat the four superstars the last time we played you guys, it wasn't because we were afraid of playing a hot Spurs team and wanted to keep our bearings and keep our reputation as being the team to beat intact going into the Western Conference playoffs. We can beat you then. We could have beaten you then. We can beat you now, and we will beat you into the future. And what the Warriors did last night to the San Antonio Spurs, coming back from a 20-point deficit to win going away in what essentially was a rout, about a 12-point win, what they did was say, we are better than you with Kevin Durant, and now we have just proven that we are better than you without Kevin Durant. Take your 9-1 and stick it in your Alamo. That's what they said to the Spurs last night. And Golden State, with just that one victory, actually not just that one victory. You heard from Klay Thompson and Steph Curry there at the beginning of that montage. Not just with that one victory, but with the one victory that followed up the Tuesday night victory over the Houston Rockets. There is just no way to look away from this. There's no way to deny this. And I wanted to deny this. I asked Rick Nolan this earlier in the week because of that 9-1 sparkling record that 9-1 sparkling record against the top teams teams with the top five records in the NBA. I said, is it time to recognize the Spurs as the best team in the NBA instead of the Cavaliers or the Warriors? And Rick said it may be. And part of that question was legit for the obvious reasons that I just described. But part of it was kind of want to, because I can't stand the Warriors. And I don't have any great love or affinity for the Spurs either, but I have major respect for what they've done. I just don't like the Warriors. I don't like Golden State's attitude. I don't like their philosophy. I don't like the cockiness of some of their players. I sure as hell cannot stand their fans. So maybe part of it was want to. But you can't be in this business and just deny obvious facts because your fandom or your dislike for another team, the opposite of fandom. We need to create a word for that, by the way. What's the opposite of being a fan of a team? A hater? That's just too easy.
Yeah, that's too easy. There's got to be a better, funner term that makes us sound smarter that we can use another word. Here.
The opposite of a fan is, somebody, when you don't like a team, you are a blank to them. You know, I am a fan of the Cavaliers. I am the opposite of a fan to the Golden State Warriors. I think we got to find a word there. I'm going to call the Webster people and tell them to come up with something new and stick it in there. Anyway, I'm not a fan of the Warriors, but I give them major respect, and I do what I have to do. And the fact that they went back-to-back with the Rockets, the team with the third-best record in the Western Conference, a team that is, I think, going to be an extraordinarily difficult out for anybody in the Western Conference in the first, second round, and maybe even all the way to the conference finals if they make it there. The Rockets are very, very good. They did that 113-106. They did the Rockets at Houston the night before, then last night on the second half of a back-to-back on the road. Now, what do we always hear? You know, oh, this is the time to rest your players in the second half of road back-to-backs. That's just asking too much of them. Well, they just went out there and said, statement game, and it was by 12. It was 110-98 at San Antonio, doing that Texas two-step shuffle and taking down Houston and San Antonio in back-to-back days. So the teams with the third-best record and second-best record collectively beaten by 19 points. They beat the Rockets by 7. They beat the Spurs by 12. 19 points. And, oh, by the way, they get the Rockets again, but back this time at their building tomorrow night out at Oracle. What the Warriors did last night was they served notice not just to the Spurs but also to the Cavaliers. If you thought we were going to be vulnerable because we had come to rely upon KD, you don't know who we are. And I will tell you this, it's true. When Kevin Durant joined the Spurs this year, I mean, I think all of us said, good God in heaven almighty, how can this be allowed to happen? Talk about a super team. You know, the Warriors last year, 73 wins. They go within a whisper of winning of their second straight NBA championship. They lose in Game 7, giving up a 3-1 series lead to the Cavaliers. And now with all of that, they add a perennial MVP candidate. They add a first-team All-NBA guy. They add a multiple-time scoring leader. You can't do that. How can you get Kevin Durant? It's just not going to be fair. And they struggled out of the gate. You remember at the beginning of the season? We thought, too many shooters. Nobody's going to want to give up their shots. You guys aren't going to be able to make this work. Too many stars. Except for the fact that that lasted like a week.
Yeah.
And then bang. All bullets firing from the chamber at the same time. I mean, I'm talking Uzi style. Here comes Clay. Here comes Steph. Here comes Durant. Here comes Green. Here comes Iguodala. Bang, 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 bang. And oh my God. And they just pushed out to the NBA's best record, as they just so often have done in recent years. So that happens, and it becomes clear that even though they are winning, now we're kind of looking at post All-Star break over the last month or two. We see them continuing to win and push that NBA's best record out, but we see Steph Curry misfiring on more than a few occasions. We see Steph Curry not looking like the two-time MVP that he is, the two-time reigning MVP, the last year first player in history to be a unanimous MVP, didn't look like himself. And then when Kevin Durant gets hurt and has that knee hyperextended, the Warriors have to go back to being the pre-Kevin Durant Warriors, and they're terrible for about a week, maybe two. The change in Warrior lineups at the start of the season by adding KD took just a little bit of time for them to figure out the chemistry, and then they were world beaters. Then the change with Kevin Durant leaving the lineup and Steph Curry still kind of struggling a little bit. Some people saying he's lost some of his luster. Maybe he's not a top 5, 6, 7, 8 guy in the NBA anymore. Kevin Durant was the straw that stirred that Golden State drink. And now that Kevin Durant's out, the Warriors are suddenly vulnerable. But it only lasted about a week. I think they were 2-4 the first 6 games without Kevin Durant. So about a week and a half, maybe 2, depending on what that schedule looked like. And ever since that time, they adjusted to pre-Kevin Durant Warrior mode again. The same Warrior mode that won 73 games last year. And they have rolled teams 9 in a row now. 9 in a row, including the 2 wins in the last 2 games against the Rockets and Spurs, the 3rd and 2nd best records in the Western Conference. Now they have said this. Bad news, bad news San Antonio. Bad news Houston. Bad news Cleveland. This is to put you on notice. Whether we have Kevin or not, we will roll you. Oh, it might take a moment or two for us to adjust when he's back. And it might take us a moment or two to adjust when he leaves with injury. But it just doesn't matter. We are better than you. And if you take a look at the last time that the Cavaliers met the Warriors and the beatdown that they got, you cannot deny it. If you take a look at what we saw the last 2 nights against Houston and San Antonio, we cannot deny it. Golden State is and should be. And I will retract my, hey, maybe San Antonio's better wishing, if you will, and say that Golden State is the odds on and should be relatively heavy favorite to win their 2nd NBA championship in 3 years. Because they are better than San Antonio. They are better than Houston. And the way the Cavaliers have played defense in the last month, matter of fact, in the last 2 months. Matter of fact, I'll go back to the stat that I had a couple of days ago. The Cavaliers, as of January 8th, I think it was, were 28-8. Since that time, 19-18. That's 500, friends. Did that include a lot of time off because of injuries? Yeah. Did they rest some guys? Yeah. Did they bring some new guys like Deron Williams in? Yeah. Did they have to go through the Luke Longley thing? Yeah. Did J.R. Smith come back from injury? Yeah. Is he rusty? Yeah. All of that's factored in, of course. But even looking at the all fully healthy Cavaliers now, except for Kyle Korver, but I forgot that added him in too. But fully healthy, they don't defend. They play no defense. And with this no defense playing team, if they started a 7-game series against the Golden State Warriors and the offensive pressure that they provide, tomorrow, it would be a four-game sweep. And it would be an embarrassment. I think the NBA came into a lot clearer focus last night with what the Warriors were able to do to the Houston Rockets. Kush, Frank, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is definitely spot on. I mean, this is still a Warriors team that is still beating people, and you're right to point out the couple of struggles they did have. That's why the max they can win this year is only 68, by the by, because they already have 14 losses. And it's because of those two dynamics. At the beginning, they struggle a little bit, as you point out, because you have to work Durant in there. And then there was about that 5-6 game stretch right after he went down hurt. By the by, bad news for everyone. The Warriors are going to be reevaluating him in 7 to 10 days, because we're now at that point, if you recall from when we were talking about him originally getting injured. So we're almost to the point where he's going to be back, you know, too. And now it's suddenly by the by. It's also 3.5. Right in the middle of the Warriors struggling, right after the lost Durant, San Antonio caught up to him, remember? Yep. Now it's back to 3.5 games of separation between the Warriors and the Spurs. And you could kind of feel it in this game, even though this was a game where San Antonio had a big lead early and
20-point
blew
lead.
It. Yeah, big one and blew it. You could tell watching the Warriors that, let's put it this way. I saw the exact opposite, you know, looks on faces and things like that that I've been seeing recently out of the Cavs. This was a team last night that clearly wanted to let everyone know, hey, you know, we're still around and we're still incredibly good and we have every intention of beating the snot out of you. And that's what I saw out of them last night, which is a look I haven't seen on the Cavs, Bob, in quite some time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they haven't played with a ferocity that it takes to win a championship in a long time. And maybe their point would be that, hey, we're not playing for a championship yet. We're saving ourselves for when it's time to play for a championship. Leave us be. Maybe that. Now, I don't think that's the case, but that's maybe the argument some would make. The reason I don't think it's the case is because what we didn't have in that montage was Kyrie Irving pretty much going off.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving is sick and tired of losing. He's sick and tired of the embarrassment. He's sick and tired of the way they look. Sick and tired of the way he's playing. Sick and tired of the way the entire team is playing. And he is letting it know that this isn't just, no, we're fine, we'll flip a switch later. That is a major problem. Make no mistake about that. But I think that truly a message was sent yesterday. If you want to call that, I don't necessarily like to hear this is a statement game. But you know what? That was a bit of a statement game for the Warriors. They wanted to not only come back on the Spurs, they won that game going away, and they really, truly, I think, they put themselves into the driver's seat as favorites, and because they put themselves into the driver's seat as favorites, I think they give everybody else something else to think about. If anybody thought, hey, we're going to go into this thing with confidence when we play the Warriors, you know, the Spurs, look at our record over the course of the last, several weeks, and look at where we are against the teams with the top five records. Cavaliers, we beat them last year, we can do it. No, sorry, that's just not the way it's going to be. When Kevin Durant comes back, and word is he's going to be reevaluated over the course of the next 7 days or so, they want to get him back for at least a few of the remaining regular season games so that they can work that chemistry thing out. What you just heard, by the way, in that montage, who was it who described the Warriors as being a better defensive team now than they were with Kevin Durant? And Kevin Durant is a great defensive player. Who was that?
I believe that was Brian Windhorst.
Was that Windhorst?
Yeah, that was Windy.
That's a terrifying thing to think about, because he's right. Kevin Durant's playing some of the best defense of his career as a Warrior. He's averaging a career high in block shots. He's shutting down his opponent. He is playing passing lanes and getting steals. He's doing, you know, just all the things you expect a really great defender to do. And without them, they have lifted it up and said, you know what, we can't play the same way that we did with Kevin there. We've got to change it up. And they did, and improved upon it.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about the Golden State Warriors? So clearly now, I think they are far and away, head and shoulders, the best team in the NBA. They're going to be the favorites against the Spurs. They're going to be the favorites against the Rockets. And yes, if the Cavaliers somehow snap out of there, we don't have to play defense ideology that they seem to be operating with right now. If they happen to find their way out of the Eastern Conference and through the Wizards and through the Celtics, which I think are going to be much harder outs than anybody realizes, especially if they don't have home court, then they're going to be favorites. The Warriors are against the Cavaliers as well.
And we'll find out an interesting small look preview into that, because they're
Playing the Bulls tonight are the Cavs, a team that for whatever reason gives the Cavs complete fits, even with a Dwayne Wade, for example, not being there. And I did just read there's no plan to rest anybody tonight. So everybody's going to be there. And this is a team that's actually had their way with the Cavs this season. So that's a very interesting preview to see where they might mentally be just by viewing some parts of this one tonight, for example. Yeah. It won't be the end-all, be-all.
No,
it
won't.
It'll be an interesting look into it. Are they really serious about some of the things we're hearing like Kyrie Irving talk about? And nobody's resting, so that won't be an excuse today.
Possibly. I'm not going to read too much into a matchup with the Bulls here, other than you're right, they have kind of owned the Cavaliers in recent games against one another. So therefore, I am interested in, you know, whether or not they are up to that challenge.
Sure.
But I don't think that'll tell us very much about, you know, where they stand in comparison.
I'm looking more for effort and attitude, honestly. More than anything, this last bunch of games for the Cavs, the final results matter because I still want them to finish ahead of Boston for the obvious reasons that you just stated, being that some of these outs are going to be much tougher than I think a lot of Cavs fans think, and you don't necessarily want to be without home court in that. But really, these last handful of games over these next couple weeks before we get to the playoff, the main thing I'm looking for out of the Cavs is effort and attitude. That'll tell a lot.
The other big NBA story from last night, of course, is the 57-point triple-double thrown on the board and onto the stat sheet by the human Tasmanian devil that is Russell Westbrook. He just continues to throw up numbers, and unlike last time he went on an incredible individual stat sheet stuffing binge, they're winning games, something they were not doing a ton of before, which is why I questioned the true value of Russell Westbrook's performances and his triple-double streak and the fact that he's going to average a triple-double the second time in NBA history in an entire season. The fact that he's going to catch the Big O with the most triple-doubles in an individual season. All of these things going on, they're actually winning now. The Oklahoma City Thunder have won 8 out of their last 10. They have won a couple in a row. They are 12 games over 500. They are locked into the sixth seed in a very, very tight battle for the fifth seed with the Clippers. And it's not out of the realm of possibility they could catch the Jazz, maybe for the fourth seed and host a first-round series. With those numbers, individually from Russell, the fact that he's winning games, the fact that he's hitting game-tying shots with 7 seconds left to force overtime in games like last night, against the Magic on their way to that 57-point outburst in a triple-double, the most in NBA history. Has he taken the lead and possibly locked up the MVP award over James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, and LeBron James? I want to discuss that coming up on the other side with our friend Dennis Maniloff. 866-240-1065. Hey, do you know what next week is? You know what the next week is the first major of the PGA Tour season? It's hard to believe the Masters are upon us, but they are. And that's the backdrop for the most exciting news I've had in a long time when it comes to fantasy sports. And that's FanDuel and Fantasy Golf. If you love golf, if you love the Masters, and you love winning money, then you've got to try Fantasy Golf with FanDuel. All you do is very simple. Pick 8 golfers for your quote-unquote team. Stay under the salary cap while you do it, and then score points for eagles, birdies, pars, and wins, and more, all scored on FanDuel.com. There's something for everybody. Tons of contests starting at just $1. Watch your score live and win cash prizes. Just make sure you submit your golf lineup before tee off on Thursday morning for the Masters, and you are in. And by the way, of course, baseball starts on Sunday as well, opening day, which means daily fantasy baseball is back too. Don't miss next Tuesday's $500,000 Major League Baseball Super Rally Contest with $100,000 to first place. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Get with it now and join us for fantasy golf at FanDuel. Experience the excitement like never before. To get started, we'll give you this. New users, if you have not done this before, you'll get FanDuel's Combo 5-Pack, valued at up to $50. That's 5 free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests. Just finish in the top half and you win cash. To get your 5 free entries at FanDuel.com, go to the website, click the Join Now button, and enter the promo code FRANCE. That's my name. It's FRANTZ. That's at FanDuel.com. Promo code FRANCE. FRANTZ. Void where prohibited. Join us for fantasy golf in time for the Masters. Right back with Maniloff after this.
Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we do continue now at 3:39. We say good afternoon to our good friend coming out of Cleveland for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, and the Northeast Media Group, and the author of From A to Z, Andrews to Zastadil, a collection of Plain Dealer Sports Center, Dennis Maniloff's best interviews. D-Man, what's going on, brother? How are you?
How you doing, Bob France? Thanks for having me.
You sound a little under the weather. Are you dealing with some of the allergies that I've been fighting or what?
Yeah, I got something going on with the sinuses, but you know what? You plow through it for Bob France.
You do? Whoa. You mean you don't take the day off and get a day of rest? Because that's kind of the new thing to do, at least in the National Basketball Association. You know, I just feel like I need a day off. What are you doing working today, man? You should be down. You should be having a cup of coffee on the bench and laughing at all the other fools who are playing the game.
It's easier to talk than to play NBA minutes.
All right, fair enough. All right, let's talk a little bit about two things that happened last night in the National Basketball Association. I think the Golden State Warriors have pretty much sent a message to the San Antonio Spurs, to the Houston Rockets, and back-to-back nights, by the way, the teams with the second and third best records in the Western Conference, two of the top four records in the entire NBA, of course, and also to the Cleveland Cavaliers by default. It doesn't matter if we have Kevin Durant, they said. If he's healthy, we will destroy you. If he's out, we will destroy you. We can adjust because we are just that deep and that talented. I cannot stand the thought because I cannot stand the Warriors. But that's what I saw yesterday. Steph Curry, I think, was kind of a bit of a shell of himself when Kevin Durant was really carrying the team and kind of elevating himself to being the best player on that team. I think it took him a while to come out of that after Durant went down with a hyperextended knee. But as you saw last night, he and they are playing with the swagger that they had last year when they won 73 games. And it's pretty evident to me that when Kevin Durant comes back, they're going to have that swagger and then some. Are they now back to being the very heavy odds-on betting favorite in your mind, Dennis Maniloff, to win another NBA championship, their second in 3 years?
Absolutely. I mean, something's going to happen adverse for them in order for the door to open. I mean, when they're playing like this, even without Durant, this is impressive, beyond impressive, actually, as you pointed out. They're beating teams. I mean, they didn't look good for a while there post-Durant, but
2-4 in the first
figured
six.
It out. Yeah, they got back to their old business, and they look good. You're right. I do it when I hold my nose and you know, cover my eyes, I guess, when I compliment the Warriors because I can't stand them either. But you have to be, you know, you have to respect what you're seeing. And clearly they're the best team in the NBA at this moment. And fortunately for the Cavs and perhaps the Spurs and the other guys, you know, they don't give you anything right now. You know, they don't give you a trophy at this moment. I guess maybe a hope could be for the opposition that when Durant comes back, they have to figure out a way to integrate him. They kind of mess up this little chemistry they got going here, and maybe the ball sharing isn't as easy. I don't know. I mean, that's just grasping, really, because it's an embarrassment of riches over there. You're even seeing the role players looking good again, like Iguodala and Livingston. And so,
It seems like it just takes them a week, Dennis, doesn't it? Yeah, we talked about this before he came on. It seems like it takes them a week to adjust to the Durant part of the equation. In other words, when the season started and Durant just joined them, they started off slow for about a week. They lost a couple of games. They lost one big. And it's like, look at that. It's not going to work. And, of course, that's just silliness. They had to develop their chemistry. And then they rolled. Then Durant went out, and they went 2-4 in their first six games. So it's like, look at that. They relied on Durant so much, now they can't win without him. And yet here they are, 9 in a row, beating the Warriors and the Spurs by a combined 19 in back-to-back nights on the road as part of the Texas two-step. And I suspect it'll be the same thing when Durant comes back from injury. It'll take a couple of games, maybe about a week for everything to, you know, gel once again. And with or without him, they're just better than everybody else.
Yeah, and that's what else are you going to say? But exactly what you did. I mean, you have to concede at this moment the Warriors are clearly the best team in the association. But as we say, thankfully for the rest of them, it's still March.
No question about it. And especially for the Cavaliers, who have what, 8 games left or 7? How many do they have left, Jim? Do you know? Is it 8 or 7? Well, it doesn't matter. 7 or 8 games to go in the regular season, and the Cavaliers have to figure out how to play defense because right now they are Cleveland minus the D. They don't get the D back until they show some. I'm picturing this Cleveland team playing a seven-game series that would be only a four-game series against this Golden State team if it were started tomorrow. And they would get swept, and it would be ugly, and it would be embarrassing because they just have no earthly idea how to play the defensive end of the floor against anybody, let alone against a high-powered, multi-pronged attack team like the Warriors. So I ask you, they got Chicago starting tonight. Again, everybody is virtually healthy and ready to go, and everybody should be rested. Do they start to turn this thing around and make a recommitment to defense starting tonight? And will they get it done in time for, you know, for them to truly defend their championship?
I'm sure they'll try to recommit to defense. As to whether they have enough time to figure it out, to even get through the East, I have to say I doubt it at this point. You know, Bob, based on the evidence, I mean.
So hold on a minute. Let me make sure I heard you right. You are at this point in time doubtful that they will represent the East in the NBA Finals.
At this moment, yes.
Okay.
I am. Because the defense has been so alarmingly bad. Okay, that's number one. And number two, you say, okay, why has it been bad? Is it, you know, because the excuse around here that's often used, oh, the Cavs don't care, they don't care, they're just, you know, they're just cruising to the playoffs, wake me up in May or whatever it is, June. But you can't say that when they go to San Antonio. They're fully loaded, you know, with the exception of Shumpert. But they want, you know, and Korver. I know those are pieces, but come on. I mean, they were relatively healthy in the places that mattered.
Absolutely.
And they were motivated, and they just couldn't stay up. You know, they couldn't stay with the Spurs. You know, I can't buy this excuse every single time they get boat raced that they're not motivated and they're bored and they can't wait for the playoffs. Eventually, you have to look at, okay, is this legitimate? Are they legitimately a bad defensive team? And the answer is yes. I don't care what their motivation is. They try hard. They just don't move fast enough. They look old and slow, and I don't know where that changes necessarily. Maybe for a game or two, they'll go all out and be able to, you know, be in your face. But is it going to last for an entire playoff series? I don't know.
Well, do you buy a tie?
Doesn't seem like it.
Do you buy Ty, as in Tyronn Lue, who said he's got the defensive key or piece to the puzzle or plan or secret formula, whatever it was, however he worded it a couple of nights ago? He said he's got it. He knows what the answer is. He's not 100% sure it will work, but he thinks he knows what the answer is. Do you buy that, or is he grasping? Is he reaching?
He got a 1-3-1 zone in his quiver. Is that what he's talking about?
I don't know what he's talking about, but he's trying to sell it.
Look, first of all, I give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that to the Cavs for being defending champs, and for Lou for first year as an NFL or NBA head coach, not full year, but first season as an NBA head coach, he wins the title. Okay, so he gets the benefit of the doubt. So you can't necessarily say that what he's telling you is not true. However, in my opinion, Lou is at a loss right now. This is just my opinion. I'm guessing that he is at a loss. He can't believe how bad this team is defensively, even if he is to implement some of the secret sauce and some of the stuff that he claims he's holding back. I think he recognizes that this team is not going to be able to get it done well enough defensively. Listen, after the Spurs game, I've never seen this, Bob. I don't know if you have. I've never seen it, never heard it. Ty Lue laughed about how much of a mismatch it was with the Spurs running up and down the court and beating the Cavs to the punch time and time again. He laughed, but he was being serious. Okay, this was not a joke. He was actually saying, I don't know. We just look so slow, as if to say, he doesn't know what he doesn't recognize what he's seeing. So when you're not joking and you have that kind of a chuckle, to me that's alarming. And
yeah, that's,
I think,
more than alarming.
Lou is just covering. He's just covering for his guys right now by saying, "Well, we haven't shown our true colors yet." I think this is a team that is in serious trouble defensively.
What will it take for you to remove that doubt that they're going to get out of the East now, that you say is crept? And by the way, kudos to you for being honest. I think most fans who support the Cavs, and really most just analysts, have said, yeah, the Cavaliers have their struggles and they have their warts, but at least they're in the East. They'll come out of the East. They're still the head and shoulders favorites. They'll play the Warriors or the Spurs in the finals, and they have that going for them. You're actually saying not maybe. You're saying you are doubtful. In other words, you think the odds are better that they will not come out of the East than they are that they will come out of the East. So what will it take to change that in the last nine games? Does it take an 8-1 run in the final nine to say, okay, they're right again? Or what do you need to see to make that the case?
I'm taking the field 51-49 at this point. But you know what, Bob? Honestly, you're going to hate me for this, but one of the things that I would recommend is LeBron sits for the final week of the season, okay? And I know that sounds completely crazy and convoluted, and why don't you want to have chemistry? To me, this guy is the key to everything, all right? LeBron is the key to everything. He must be as rested and healthy as possible. Now, he said he wants to play it all the way through, and he wants to keep going the minutes, you know, the Bob France-style minutes. He wants to keep doing it. I'm saying
No, don't say that. Don't say that. I've never said anything about his minutes. He doesn't need to lead the league in minutes, or I think this year he's 12th right now in minutes played. I've never said that. I have a problem with healthy scratches. I didn't say he's not playing enough minutes.
Okay. Good clarification by you. You're right. He wants to play. And I would say, LeBron, you sit and just relax regardless of the seed, okay, because his team, we've got the ridiculous streak. It's in the 20s, I think it is, of consecutive playoff series where his teams have won at least one road game. So I don't think you worry about going on the road. Do you prefer to be the top seed? Of course. Or at worst, the two seed? Yes. And you could potentially fall out of the one or two, maybe even the third if Toronto's hot enough. You could be fourth if LeBron sits for a final week. But I would rather have the rested and ready to rumble LeBron, not only for the fact that he can give you the high-powered offense, but I truly believe that this team's defense starts with LeBron James. And I've defended him because I think that he's asked to do so much offensively that he has to conserve himself defensively. But in this case, with your team in such dire straits defensively, LeBron has got to be better on defense. He just has to be. And I think when that happens, the rest of the guys will hopefully follow, and you'll see a better unit, a better five-on-a-string defensive effort. Now, what won't change overnight and probably won't change this season is – the fact that they don't have great on-ball defenders beyond, you know, Smith when he's engaged and Shumpert. And I mean, they're great, but they're precisely good.
Why when you're done, I'm going to disagree with you on your entire philosophy because of what you just said. But go ahead and finish your
thing. Yeah, the bottom line is they're not going to be able to solve the dribble penetration issues that, for example, Kyrie has. I mean, and Kyrie doesn't fight through picks, and we all know that. And he gets burned off the dribble. I mean, John Wall torched them. Lowry has fun with them. You know, and they try to switch off. They try not to have Irving guard those guys. But when he does, it's ugly. So number one, you're going to give up the dribble penetration, even if LeBron is fully engaged. Number two, you're not going to protect the paint. You're not going to protect the rim, even if LeBron is fully engaged on the defensive side. So those problems are not going to automatically go away. But I would rather have a rested LeBron, fully rested LeBron, than a guy who, you know, has played it all the way through the end of the season.
All right, and that's fair enough, and I appreciate your explanation. I think what you said in the second part is what nullifies the first part, and that is they don't play good on-the-ball defense. They're not good man-to-man defenders, especially on the perimeter, which means if they're going to win, they have to play team defense. And that means knowing where everybody is going to be on the help side. It means knowing that if my guy does get behind me, this is how we're going to counter it because I don't have a big old shot blocker back there, and they don't. I think they need all nine games to play everybody as much as they can together so that they can figure out how we are going to be a better team defensive team because individually we're not good defenders. We can't defend forget about the making it to the final. I don't think you can defend John Wall and Bradley Beal. if you aren't a better a team defensive unit, and you don't get to be better as a team if half of your guys, or especially when your best guy, LeBron, is sitting on the bench for the final week. I think they need as much many minutes on the court together as possible in order to fix that before the playoffs start.
As usual, you make an astute point, Bob, and that's how they're going to play it. Okay, that's how it sounds like the Cavs are going to play it, just the way you described it. And it sounds like that's LeBron's mindset. We need to be on the court as much as humanly possible in these remaining games so that we can get some of these chemistry issues ironed out. We can get the familiarity back to where, you know, everybody's supposed to be. Listen, there's a couple things, too, that I think are wrinkles. They qualify as wrinkles, and I don't think they're outlandish, even though some people would laugh at me. Number one, I don't see why the Cavs don't go to a zone for like 5 minutes a game. I really don't. I mean, I think they're better suited to play zone every couple of minutes, and you don't make a habit of it, but it's available to you in the NBA. Why not use it every once in a while? But, of course, you know, their egos don't let them do that.
Very true.
The other thing is Larry Sanders. I mean, I've been talking about this. I know Larry Sanders is not in, you know, fantastic game shape by any stretch. He's down in Canton still, but they need Larry Sanders. I've said this from, you know, I didn't say specifically Larry Sanders in December, but they need him. They need somebody to spell Tristan Thompson, because you can talk all you want about LeBron maybe not being as great defensively as he needs to be, or Kyrie struggling defensively, but I'll tell you what, LeBron and Kyrie pretty much make up for it on the offensive side. I mean, without those two guys, you got nothing. Tristan Thompson has been the biggest disappointment on this team this year. Yes, J.R. Smith's right there with him, but Smith has been out, and, you know, and he's also had some, you know, off-court family situation that you really feel for him on. So, listen, I don't want to tag Smith in with this, but Thompson is the guy to me that's been the colossal disappointment. And he's not doing anything well that I can see. And, you know, you make the excuse, wow, he's undersized 6'9 center. Can you imagine him as a power forward? Can you imagine him trying to score? Yeah, he has no offense. And that's so disappointing to me. Here's a guy making, what is it, $17 million a year, and he still doesn't have a jump shot? I mean, come on. So you're playing 4-on-5 with him offensively, and invariably the ball, you know, he'll throw the ball right back to Kyrie or right back to LeBron when they send it in. You can't run anything through him. And defensively, he's too small, and his rebounding is pretty much his only calling card, and that's fallen off.
And it's down this year. Yeah, you're right. Hey, Dennis, I've only got 3 minutes left. I'm going to get a couple other things covered here. Jim Cushman's got a question.
You need a sub for Thompson. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Jimmy, go ahead.
That's such a good point on Thompson. You know, D-Man, I was thinking about that, too, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but you're right. I mean, we all know the not as great a rim protector, maybe because of size, but you're right. Even I've noticed that the rebounding, even though it's not horrible, it's not like he's at 6 boards a game, he's at 9-something, I believe, but it doesn't feel right. That's such a good point. What I wanted to ask you, though, is because I'm having the same overall doubts, I still say publicly, and I still believe this, that they should and probably will beat anybody in the East 4 out of 7, but overall this stretch, particularly because of this no defense thing that they're doing, I do for the first time have my legitimate doubts about this as well. And so my question is, out of all of these various teams, which one is the one that you don't want to see the most? Because for me, I'll be straight up honest, it's not Boston, it's Washington for me. I want nothing to do with the Wizards, yeah. And especially John Wall. You know, he's still mad as anything that Kyrie gets all the pub and he does not on that front.
Chris, you're absolutely right. I would rank them number one, the Wizards. They have no fear of the Cavs. And they have a lot of quicks, and they have jump shots that can cause the Cavs all sorts of trouble. So the list Wizards 1, Celtics 2, because they're, again, don't fear the Cavs. They're gritty, grimy. You know, crazy things happen in Boston. So they feel like they can get it to a seventh game, and it'll be a free-for-all at that point. The third team, you know, some might laugh at me, but I think it's the Miami Heat. I don't want any part of the Miami Heat if I'm the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I know the Cavs just shouldn't fear anybody, and they're not intimidated by the Miami Heat. But you look at the way the Heat's played since that disastrous start, and they have pieces that give the Cavs trouble. You know, a guy like, you know, Dragic is a terrific dribble penetrator that Kyrie can't stop. Whiteside is a problem and a headache. They play physical. They're fearless. They don't, you would say they have nothing to lose. So that's, to me, the nightmare scenario if the Cavs were to draw the Heat in the first round and struggle with them.
D-Man, last thing we'll let you run. Outside of the Cavaliers, last night, the human Tasmanian devil whirled his way around the court for an NBA record 57 in a triple-double. They have won 8 of their last 10 in a playoff push. They're threatening to take the 5th seed, maybe even push up to the 4th seed. Possible they could catch the Jazz in the final 8 games. Talking, of course, about the Thunder. Did Russell Westbrook win the MVP last night?
Pretty much, if he hasn't already. I mean, listen, I've made the case for LeBron. I think he's had an MVP caliber season. I've also said that it's his until somebody rips it away. Well, it should be his until somebody rips it away, even though he hasn't won it the last couple. But I think this is one of those cases. And even the James Harden year is one of those cases where somebody has ripped it and has been so good that you can't ignore it. And Russell Westbrook, you take him off the Thunder, and they are a lottery team. They're nothing. And that, to me, is an indicator of most valuable as well. So, yes, I would say the front runner would be Westbrook and Harden 2, and then I would obviously go with LeBron 3 and Kawhi probably 4th.
All right, good stuff. You know, I've gone back and forth on Harden and Westbrook really a lot of the season, especially in the second half. And I was down on Westbrook for a while because it looked like the stat sheet stuffing was just that, and they weren't winning. They lost 4 in a row and 6 out of 7 or something stupid about a month ago. But, boy, they are doing it now. He is doing it. He's taking it to yet another level, which is just amazing to see. And I think he is winning people over, including yours truly. D-Man, always a pleasure talking NBA with you. Thank you, my friend. Next time we talk, we're going to have to talk baseball. Season starts on Sunday. Cannot wait to talk to you next week.
I hear you, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Dennis. Thanks for playing hurt, too, by the way. We certainly appreciate that. All right, here we go. Here's what we're going to do since we're at the top of the hour and we've got a Sports Center coming our way. I want to give you an opportunity to win something outstanding. And you know what? Even if you don't win it from me, take advantage of it tomorrow morning as we give you the sweet deal of the week, a $50 gift certificate for just $25 tomorrow to Chomp Burger in Adrian, Michigan. Log on to 1065theticket.com starting at 9 a.m. and win that $50 gift certificate. Not win, should say buy that $50 gift certificate for half price, just $25 to Chomp Burger. But you can win one now for $0. Caller number 866-240-1065 is the number. That prize will be yours. Chomp Burger, I love that name, by the way, up in Adrian, Michigan. So good luck to you. Coming back on the other side, want to get you on the radio at 866-240-1065 right here on the table.
Especially when you play the second and third best record teams in the NBA, you want to send a message and you play the best. And I thought we played great these last two games. Well, we want to win every game we're in. Doesn't matter who's out there. We just want to finish the year strong and not look ahead to the playoffs, even though it's hard to because everyone's eager to get there.
I mean, every game's different, but you don't let go of the rope. You know, whether you end up in a win or loss, you can't ever feel like you're out of it. You know, we have what it takes to win all sorts of ways.
They made shots. Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, you know, they all made tough shots. David West made shots. I thought they were pretty sharp in their cutting. They moved the ball better than we did.
One of the things that's happened since Durant went out is they have really locked down on defense and turned into a defensive monster. This injury has made the Warriors a better defensive team, and Durant is an excellent defensive player.
It's a big deal. Obviously, we're not there yet, but we're in a great position. If we're able to monitor minutes and maybe give a guy a night off or something and prepare for the playoffs, but we're not there yet.
Sorry, they're human. They go through so much every single day. So many obligations off the court that you don't know about. Family. There's so much going on. Sometimes it ain't from it all. It might not be physical. It might just be a reset mentally. I get that. And I also get if I was a fan, I could afford to get the tickets and I'm circling LeBron James or Steph Curry on my calendar or Russell Westbrook. I would want to see them play live. I'm really disappointed as well. But I see it from a fan perspective and a player perspective.
know they can turn it on. And when Kyle Korver gets healthy, J.R. Smith's still coming back, Kevin Love's coming back. So as bad as they look right now, they're still coming back and they're still the defending champs. Clearly, LeBron James has made a real point of saying, I'm fine. I don't need to rest. I mean, you saw him in San Antonio and he said, I feel great. You know, if other guys need to rest, they need to go talk to coach about that. And then, you know, yesterday in Chicago at the end of practice, he was staying late and putting on his own personal dunk contest. I think the messaging from LeBron is, I'm not trying to taper my minutes.
When they get down in games, they have a habit where Kyrie and LeBron just put their head down and try to outscore the competition. That's been going on all year, and that's the kind of thing really super talented players do before that they learn that as a team, defense in the NBA is how you come back from being behind.
I just love what I saw from the Indians again this spring. They're going to have Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar back in their rotation. They're going to have Edwin Encarnacion in the middle of that lineup. And now it appears they might have Michael Brantley in left field on opening day. And those are four guys that basically didn't even play for them in the World Series last year, and they came this close to beating the Cubs. I think the Indians are the best team that I saw in the American League.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
For the record, we will be doing some baseball preview tomorrow right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader, so we will kind of get you set. I agree, by the way, with Buster Olney there with his projections. I really think the Indians are, I don't want to say heads and shoulders above the rest of the American League with respect to going back to the World Series and winning another flag. It wouldn't be heads and shoulders, but certainly shoulders and elbows. How about that? Because it really is all about the starting rotation, and you just heard it. With Carrasco and Salazar being healthy, if Tomlin stays healthy and Bauer continues to progress, and obviously Corey Kluber is a Cy Young candidate virtually every year, I think that is the team to beat in the American League. We'll get into that tomorrow a little bit. Also, of course, on the Tigers as well. As we give you a little preview edition tomorrow. Also tomorrow on the program, we'll spend a little bit more time on the Final Four. As that will be happening this weekend. I'm a Gonzaga fan. I said it before the tournament started. I didn't pick them to win. I thought Arizona would come out of the West. I only have one of my Final Four that I picked at the start of the tournament are in the Final Four, and that's Oregon. I did pick Oregon to come out of the, that was what, Midwest? And then I picked Arizona to come out of the West. I picked Duke to come out of the East, and I picked North Carolina. Oh, so I guess I have two. I take that back.
Yeah, I'm the one who has one, just Carolina.
Yeah,
North
I forgot I had Carolina.
Carolina
and Oregon. So my mistake there. But obviously South Carolina crashing the Duke party, not only against Duke literally, but also in the, you know, winning the region. And then Arizona got upset by Xavier. And then, of course, we saw Gonzaga take them all apart. So, yeah, you've got one left. I've got two. What do you have, Frank?
I've got one with Kush. I've got North Carolina.
You've got North Carolina.
This is what I get
too.
For picking Northwestern to go to the Final Four.
And you picked Michigan to go to the Final Four, too.
And I was so close. Don't even get me started on it.
I will say this. I will not make fun of you for that. As you know, I picked Michigan to go to the Sweet 16 in my bracket. And then I picked Michigan to lose to Oregon in that Sweet 16 round. Mm-hmm. But right the day before the game, I was just kind of really all caught up in the hysteria of how well Michigan played and how well-rounded they looked against Louisville, yep. The number two seed. I changed my pick, not on a bracket, of course, because I don't do brackets for money anyway, so it's not like I cheated or anything. But I just changed my pick on the radio. I said, you know what? I'm going to take Michigan to beat Oregon, even though I have Oregon on my bracket. And they came within a jump shot of doing it. It was in the air when the buzzer sounded. It could have happened. But as it turns out, a great run by the Wolverines cut short, and the Ducks are on their way to the Final Four.
Yeah, and I will go ahead. I have no problem making fun of myself on this because once we got into the first weekend, so the Saturday, Sunday of round two, that's when all my bracket went to complete garbage. And so I don't mind embarrassing myself when I say my wife's bracket, Bob, did better than mine. Not a joke.
Wow, that's hardcore, man. That's bad. That's really bad. You don't admit that on radio. You can't do it. You can't work in sports radio and admit that the wife did better than you did. That's just not, you can't do that. How does that happen?
You pick Virginia.
Did she pick by colors and mascots the way so many women do? And I don't mean to be disrespectful or sexist sounding, but we've all been in those pools, you know, office pools or whatever the case might be,
yep.
Where you have the, you know, the never watches basketball, usually a female. It doesn't have to be, so that's why I don't want this to be sexist. It could be just a, you know, a non-basketball nerdy guy, you know, who doesn't, you know, who's not into sports. But they do the pool because it's what everybody's in the office doing, and they play it by mascot. Well, Wolverines are a heck of a lot tougher than Ducks, so I'll take Michigan. And wait a minute, what's a Tar Heel anyway? A Tar Heel? I'm going to take a Wildcat over somebody's dirty shoes any day. You know, and then they end up winning. They end up using that philosophy or favorite color uniforms and beating the person who supposedly studies this thing for, you know, for a living.
Yes, and that is kind of, well, not the mascot part, but more or less the rest of that. Yeah, that's kind of what happened to me, and I've been walking around the house in shame for the past week.
Wow. Well, you should, and you're going to wear that shame at least through the weekend as the Final Four comes, and then on Monday's show. Monday and Tuesdays, we preview the championship game and then react to it. We're going to make sure that you wear that because that is simply unacceptable.
I deserve it. I wouldn't have brought it up. I know I deserve it.
Hey, I didn't ask you two guys what I asked Maniloff there at the end. Just last thing on the NBA, then I'm going to get a couple of other quick things. Is Westbrook the guy? And where were you before yesterday? Have you been in his camp all along? Frank, you go first.
Yeah, I've always been a Westbrook guy. It's one of those things where it's like if the guy really does average a triple-double this season, how do you not give it to him?
Honestly, okay, so it's
how
just,
do you not do
go ahead.
It? That's all I have.
So to you, it's just about the triple double. It's not about winning. If they were, you know, if they were, let's say they had the Pistons record right now, mm-hmm. you know, if they had 30 wins or 32 wins or something, we're going to have, you know, 50 losses. I don't know exactly what it is, but the triple double would be enough for you, even if they weren't doing anything as a team.
You know, Bob, you always say it. It's not really MVP, but it's Player of the Year. And I think those stats really do merit Player of the Year. I mean, his supporting cast
yeah,
around.
Yeah, but
no,
to be
nothing...
clear, to be clear, I have always said that in the context of if they are so far superior to everyone else's, then you give it to him for having the best individual season. But if there is somebody else who is close to you. And they are doing it for a team that is playing more meaningful games and winning, you know, a division or close to winning a division, then I don't think you can necessarily automatically go there. So to me, if Westbrook is at, say, 32 and 10 and 11, and Harden is at 30 and 10 and 8 or something like that, and I don't know exactly, I don't have them in front of me, but that's what it was, you know, for a good chunk of the last couple of months, well, then they're almost identical. With the exception of two things. One, you don't have the magical quote-unquote triple-double on one side, but you have, you know, 20 more wins on the other side. And so to me, if you've got two guys who are kind of neck and neck and close to one another, I'm going to err on the side of the guy on the better team because he's leading his team to potentially a championship than a guy who's leading his team nowhere. Now, having said that, I don't want to confuse anybody and say that's the case here, because I've praised. That's why I've come around on Westbrook, as I said. He is winning now. They are 43-31. The Houston Rockets are 51-23. So it's 8 more wins for James Harden's team, third best in the West. But that's not, you know, a 20-game separation like I was describing with you when I said, when you said it's just all about the trip dub. You know, if they're a 30-win team and they're 20 wins fewer than the Rockets, would you still say that if the Rockets star is in a very, very comparable place statistically to your guy?
If it was that close and the Thunder were absolute trash, yeah, maybe I would be changing my mind here. But as of right now, Westbrook's got it.
That's the right answer, by the way. I'm glad to hear you say that, because if you wouldn't have said that, I would have been very, very disappointed. Here are the numbers. James Harden, 29.3, 11.4 assists, 8 rebounds a game from a point guard position. And I know he's listed as a shooting guard, but he handles the ball and he runs the offense. He's a point guard in the same way that Westbrook is a point guard. So I just want to be clear about that. And let me give you the exact up to the moment Westbrook stats after last night's 57-pointer. Westbrook is 31.8 points, so 31.8 to 29.3, so he's 2.5 points more per game. He is 10.4 assists to Harden's 11.4, so Harden wins that battle. And Westbrook has 10.6 rebounds to Harden's 8.0 rebounds. So he's got 2.6 there. So slightly better in rebounding, slightly better in points, slightly worse is Westbrook than Harden in assists. Harden has 8 more victories and is going to be a higher seed in the West, and probably one of the top, you know, 3 favorites, as you would imagine the top 3 seeds would be, but to actually come out. I don't think anybody thinks the Thunder's going to win a playoff series. So with that in mind, you still Westbrook?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I am.
Kush?
I've been more or less in the Harden camp most of the time, though as you can attest to, Bob, I've when this has come up in these last couple months, I've said, I kind of lean towards Harden because of where his Rockets team is, that if Westbrook finishes with the triple-double, even if it doesn't change my personal vote, which, of course, I don't have one, obviously, but we do know that it's probably going to be Westbrook if he finishes that with the triple-double, and we're pretty much at the point where he's going to have to get like 5 assists and rebounds per game the rest of the game, the rest of the way, I think, for those numbers to go back under 10. I think we're almost at the point where he's going to have clinched this thing in terms of statistically. So I'm still kind of in the Harden camp because of the overall turnaround of where this Rockets team is. And then the fun side note, by the by, of whichever side of this kind of conversation you may fall on, well, if it stays in the West right now, you're getting Westbrook v. Harden in round one.
Right now would be a 3-6 matchup.
You're correct.
Which is very, now of course all the votes will have to be in by then.
Right.
So you can't just wait and see who wins the playoff series.
Sure.
That's what I'll do. There's no doubt about that. But here's the reason why, and I like you have been in the Harden camp for all the reasons I just laid out to Frank. But what Westbrook is doing now in helping to carry his team to victories is what has put me over perhaps to his side. I've always said this. When he was doing, he had a run in early March, so earlier this month, of 4 straight losses to the Blazers, the Suns, the Mavericks, and to the Blazers again. And he put up incredible numbers on incredibly high shot totals. And I gave you his shooting percentages, and I'm not going to go through them all again, but I gave you shooting percentages and his shooting volume. I said, my goodness, and I know it's about assists and rebounds too, and so you can't say how you say he's greedy if he's getting all the assists too, but it's like, you know, when you're not shooting well, and you have, especially from 3, and you've got 5 teammates with a higher 3-point shooting percentage than you have, give the ball up late in games and let other guys shoot it. That's one of the criticisms that, you know, that we had, or a lot of people had, against Westbrook when he was playing with Durant. Give the ball to Durant. He is the shooter when a bucket needs to be had. And Russell Westbrook is just not a good 3-point shooter. And I ran that and I said it's costing them games. So I don't care that he had a triple-double in each of those games. I don't care that he's scoring tons of points. I'm looking at shot totals and I'm looking at victories because he's not helping his team win. And I said, that's when I said, no way. Russell Westbrook is going to be 2nd or 3rd on my MVP list. Since that 4-game losing streak, they beat the Spurs 102-92. They beat the Jazz ahead of them in the Western Conference playoff standings, 112-104.
Those are good wins.
Those are very quality wins. They beat the Nets, 122-104. Not a quality win because it's the Nets, but they beat them by 18. You know, just for the sake of comparison, sure. The Pistons, who should have beaten the Nets, lost to them just a week ago. Okay? They beat the Raptors, an Eastern Conference playoff team in the top half of the seedings, 123-102. They beat the Kings, 110-94. And oh, by the way, those were all in a row. That's a 5-game winning streak that followed that 4-game losing streak. Then they lost to the Warriors, and he did not have a good game as a lot, you know, the Spurs just lost to the Warriors too. The Rockets and Harden just lost to the Warriors too, so I don't think there's any shame there. Then they beat the 76ers by 25, 122-97, and he went off again. Then in the loss to Harden and the Rockets, which you could point to and say, well, maybe this is a, you know, the deciding factor. You know, Harden got the best of him. It was a 137-125 game. Following that, it was a win over the Mavericks, 92-91. And, of course, just last night's 57-point, 13-11, I think, outburst, the highest individual scoring game in any triple-double in NBA history. So I'm adding all that up, and guess what? They're 8-2 in their last 10. he is not only putting up the same numbers in victory that he was putting up in defeat, he's increasing them, and he's making shots late. 7 seconds left. And again, he's not a great outside shooter, but 7 seconds left last night. He scored the tying basket that sent that game to overtime that gave them an opportunity to beat the Magic. So, you're talking about a really tremendous individual effort all season long that wasn't manifesting itself, in my opinion, in enough victories for a while, that is now. And so when the facts change, in my opinion, then your viewpoint should change. And to me, the facts have changed to the point where it's not like the Rockets are running away and hiding from the Thunder in terms of victory totals, if that's where you are with the James Harden argument. It's a difference of 8 right now. And with what Westbrook continues to do with a far, far inferior roster, I feel like the facts have changed enough now. They're winning enough now. 8 out of 10 in a playoff drive. With that roster surrounding him, I just feel like that the facts have changed, and therefore so should my opinion. And right now, if I had a vote, and I were in the vote were held today, I would send it in for Russell
Westbrook. And that's very well thought out. It absolutely is. And to actually help add to your point about the winning part is, think of the team. I mean, we're talking about a Magic team, a not very good, going nowhere Magic team. And they needed every single one of those, up to and including and beyond. The shot you're referring to was 7 seconds, just to force the overtime and then beat them, adding to the argument of, well, if we're also going to throw in the numbers, remember the valuable part of the word, I'm pretty sure that means he's very valuable, because this Thunder team would have totally lost to a bad Magic team without his guy. So now you're also, and the game before against Dallas, that was only a 1-point win. I bet Russell Westbrook's not there, that's probably a loss. So that helps add, I think, to your argument, that it's not just that they're beating teams, but some of the way these games are going down, it's clear that Russell Westbrook is the factor in that.
Now, do you want to hear, while we're sitting here trying to figure it out and trying to make our call, Westbrook or Harden? Harden or Westbrook? That means we've got guts. That means we've got the coolions to say one or the other. And I said Harden, and now I say Westbrook. The one thing I won't do is take the easy way out. The easy way out, which is split the award.
A couple of weeks ago, I said an MVP award had damn well better have James Harden's name on it when he had back-to-back-to-back 40-point games plus a couple of triple-doubles thrown into the mix. He's been absolutely sensational. I'm at that point where I don't care what the NBA says. I don't care about this notion that you got to pick one or the other. I'm going to roll with my man Mark Jackson, our colleague right here on ESPN and ABC, when he spoke to Scott Van Pelt last night, and he said, hey, there has to be a co-MVP. It would be a shame if either name was off the MVP trophy. I don't think this is one of those situations. As a matter of fact, I think this is one of those rare situations where the NBA better hear what the public is saying. Regardless of the chance in Orlando, and definitely they are valid, and props to those fans for appreciating greatness, as we saw last night from Russell Westbrook, who's not just a superstar, but he is box office. The way that he plays, it's must-see television. It's just one of those situations right now where they're starting to win even more games after that 4-game losing streak. Russell Westbrook is, he's on top of it all. He's the leader. He's the reason why it's happening. He's nothing short of sensational. He's balling. They're going to the playoffs, and he's just putting up buckets after buckets after buckets. I'm just of the mindset that there has to be a co-MVP. I can't keep it away from Russell Westbrook any longer. It's got to be both he and James Harden. I cannot take it away from either guy. They say that you have to make a choice. I say, no, you don't.
Yes, you do, you coward, you. Are you stuck? You don't get, I don't know, I like both of them. You know what? If you got two beautiful women that really love you and want to marry you, you know what you can't do? Unless you go to Utah and become a Mormon, you can't marry both of them. All right? You got to pick one. You don't get to do both. You've got to pick one. And you know what? That's the way I'm. No co-MVPs for me.
Yeah,
there's one winner and there's one loser. Decide if they are both putting up, quote-unquote, as Frank reminded me, what I always say, player of the year type numbers, and they are, then find another way to separate them. And if it's win totals, then it's win totals. How about defense? Which one of them plays better D if they're both putting up you know, historic type offensive stat sheets. What about defense? Find something to separate them. You can't take the easy way out. That's just, and he's a sports talk radio dude. Stephen A. Smith is, and he's one of the best. And he's very opinionated, and he's very entertaining, and I listen to him and watch him every day, and I yell at him sometimes, and I really get mad at him sometimes when he goes political in the wrong direction. But you know what? When you're in sports radio, man, you got to make a call here. You don't go say both. Now, to be clear, I said Oregon would beat Michigan, then changed to Michigan will beat Oregon. And obviously now that I was right the first time around, I'm back on, all right, I was right, Oregon got to. That's different. It's different because never at any point did I say, they're so close, they'll tie. I didn't say that. I changed my mind on who was going to win and who was going to lose. And I changed my mind on James Harden first and now to Russell Westbrook in the lead now. But I'm still going to have to pick one or the other. I think calling for co-MVPs is weak. Do you guys think they will? They could. There could be or will be co-MVPs? And if they are you okay with that?
I would not be okay with that. That's a silly move. As you're describing that and playing that clip from Stephen A., the first thing I'm thinking of is, can you imagine 5 years ago in Major League Baseball, if we had that, you'd have Triple Crown Miguel Cabrera splitting an MVP award with Mike Trout? Yeah, that's all I was picturing in my head as Stephen A. was talking. So, yeah, I'm with you, Bob. That's weak. I'm completely against it. Now, when the votes are tallied, is it possible that we could end up in a tie? I think that is possible. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's ever happened. There's been obviously close ones before, votings before, but I'm pretty sure that's never happened before. But I would say it's possible, but I don't think it'll happen this year. And I hope there's no tie.
You know who would hate it the most? You know who would hate it the most?
Who?
Russell Westbrook and James Harden.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. They don't want to split this.
I honest to God believe that Russell Westbrook would rather finish second and then have something to complain about and something to drive him than to split it and say, okay, I was just as good as this guy. And I think James Harden would rather do the same. He'd rather win it, but I think if it came down to sharing it with the other guy, he'd rather say, no, that's bullcrap. Give it to him. I'll win it next year. I'm going to come back and play better. I can't see either one of these guys saying, let's kiss my sister. Let's have a tie. We'll settle for a tie, and we're both the MVP, and you get a trophy, and I get a trophy. And, oh, by the way, down at the bottom where it says 2016-17 NBA Most Valuable Player, it's not going to say Russell Westbrook in big, bold letters carved into that plaque or into that, what do you call the little thing on a trophy, the little part where they put the name on it, the engraving, whatever.
Oh, yeah, I forget off the top of
my head. It's not going to be engraved Russell Westbrook. It's going to be engraved in small font. Because you have to make room for, and James Harden. And it's not going to say James Harden in big letters. It's going to say small letters because you got to save room for, and Russell Westbrook. They are not going to be happy with the splitting of the thing. They don't want to cut the NBA trophy in half. You get half and I get half. Nobody would be happy with this.
Yeah, nobody would, and nobody should. And I hope it doesn't happen, because then the door would be open to future trends in this situation if you get like that. So, but I am saying, I suppose, given the debate that we're all having about this topic, I suppose, again, it's possible that the vote tally could finish in a tie, though I don't think so, because a lot of things would obviously have to go bounce certain ways, if you will, for a vote to end up tied.
Yeah.
And in principle, splitting MVP awards, that's no. Frank, let's not even go there.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of ties in anything sports related. Like in the NFL, I can't believe that two teams go and hit each other all game long to end up in a tie and have no resolution. It's the same thing.
Exactly right. You play that long, that many games,
right,
and then at the end it's like, okay, you guys share. Especially Westbrook. Westbrook would never be able to accept that because, again, you know, he will have done something that nobody else in NBA history has done except for Oscar Robertson, mm-hmm. and that is to average that triple-double. For that not to be an all-timer, an obvious win, I think he'd rather take the loss and just let everybody else think about how stupid. It would have been how stupid people would have felt about Miguel Cabrera not winning that MVP when he won the Triple Crown. The Triple Crown is just, it's an automatic. It does, you know, how many times has it happened?
That was my argument that entire September, because nobody had won it since Yaz with the Red Sox in 67, and I don't know how many
there have been overall. Do you know how many total times it's happened?
I want to say around 8.
Okay, so more than the triple-double thing, but still an extraordinarily rare feat. And it would have been like saying, okay, Miguel, you did something nobody has done since Yaz, and it's only been done, say, 8 times in history, but you're sharing the crown? It would have been like, wait, yeah. What? Same thing with Westbrook. Nobody has done what you just did except for the Big O. And it didn't win you the award. You have to share it with somebody. He'd be like, you know what? Take it, man. Take it. Yeah. I don't want it.
I think you're right.
Finish second, I think, than share it.
And he'd rather play with that chip on the shoulder afterwards. Yeah. I averaged a triple double and didn't win an MVP. That's the kind of thing that individually, if that can't motivate you, then I don't know what does.
By the way, there's somebody else who thinks that this might be what's coming. See if you can tell who this is.
Who's the MVP of the NBA this year?
Yo, it's tough, man. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's hard to really come up with a rational decision of who should be MVP. So it's tough. We might see our first co-MVPs this year.
Oh, would you be okay with that?
As a player, I wouldn't be. But here, I mean, it's fair is fair.
Can you recognize that voice? Who was that?
Oh, jeez. I'm blanking.
Frank, who was that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, my God. How do you not recognize the voice, which sounded for his entire career so much like Michael Jordan's that people thought he was doing it on purpose so he could sound like Mike in addition to playing like Mike? How do you not recognize the voice of Kobe Bean Bryant?
Real quick. Oh, it was Kobe Bryant.
What were you going to say?
I was thinking Kobe Bryant if you played it one more time, but...
Kobe Bryant. And you heard what he said, and I played that just to kind of buttress the point I'm making, that Harden and Westbrook would be the ones most upset about this thing. Listen again to Jalen Rose asking Kobe. All right, I don't hear it. Hold on a second. One more time. And here we go.
Who's the MVP of the NBA this year?
Yo, it's tough, man. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's hard to really come up with a rational decision of who should be MVP. So it's tough. We might see our first co-MVPs this year.
Oh, would you be okay with that?
As a player, I wouldn't be. But here, I mean, it's fair is fair.
There he is. You heard him.
Yeah.
As a player, I wouldn't be okay with sharing the award. But as an analyst sitting up here at a desk, hey, it's fair, fair is fair. The players would hate it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely hate it.
And they would, and they should.
Absolutely.
I hope it doesn't happen.
It really would, I think, be a smack in the face to both of them. And it's also weak. It's just weak. Come on, guys. Seriously, you can't be, you know, Stephen A. and these other guys saying it's okay to do this. It is not okay to do this. All right. By the way, speaking of players, let me give you a few of them who are going to start a week from today in a chase for the green jacket. Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Hideki Matsuyama, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler. Who do you like? Justin Rose, Jason Day. Maybe you like Adam Scott, the big hitter. Who do you like? Are you willing to put a little bit of money on it? Doesn't have to be a lot of money. It could be as little as a dollar if you want. I'm talking about fantasy golf. That's right. Get to FanDuel.com and play fantasy golf in time for the Masters. If you love golf and winning money, you've got to try this. Pick 8 golfers, all right? You pick them from the field. You stay under the salary cap. Everybody costs money. And you score points then for eagles, birdies, pars, and more as you watch the tournament. You watch it in real time, watch your score live, and you can win cash prizes. Contests are there for everybody starting at just a dollar, all right? It's just a great time, a great way to make a great time watching golf and watching major events. Make it even better. And by the way, baseball starts on Sunday. Opening day, daily fantasy baseball was back too. Don't miss next Tuesday's $500,000 MLB Super Rally contest with $100,000 to the first place winner. How about that? Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel, and now you can be one of them, especially if you decide to play fantasy golf with us. To get started, new users like yourself perhaps will get FanDuel's combo 5-pack valued at up to $50. That's 5 free entries to a combination of 50-50 beginner contests. All you got to do is finish in the top half, and you win cash. To get your 5 free entries, go to FanDuel.com, F-A-N-D-U-E-L, FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button and enter the promo code France. That's my last name. You've got to type it in right, F-R-A-N-T-Z, France, at FanDuel.com. It's void where prohibited, but get yourself on board with fantasy golf in time for the Masters. Right back after this.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, I forgot to say congratulations to our winner last hour. It is Jason Brinkman of Bowling Green who won our sweet deal of the week. So he has got an outstanding prize. He's going to Chomp Burger up in Adrian, Michigan with a $50 gift certificate for nothing. You can't have one for nothing now, but you can get one for half price, $25, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock when they go on sale on our website, 1065theticket.com. Okay, only have a couple minutes left here. Jim Cushlin, I want you to give us
yes.
what we didn't get yesterday from you because we ran out of time. And that is the lowdown. You have some very impressive and important numbers for us to really understand what it means for the Red Wings to not be in the playoffs this year for the first time in 25 years. They've made it to the postseason 25 straight years. And as I said yesterday, that's kind of like, it's expected. And when it's not there, that's only when you really truly appreciate what an amazing accomplishment it is when it's gone, when that streak is over. And so in order to really understand it, give us some numbers.
Yeah, and I always, by the way, I also love also saying it like this. If you're 25 years old or younger, you have literally never heard a human being utter the phrase, the Red Wings have been mathematically eliminated from playoff contention.
True. That's a fascinating way to look at it.
That makes me feel like, when I say things like that, it makes me feel like it's even longer than that. But as I dug up some numbers because, of what was accomplished during this Red Wings skid, which is now over. Obviously, we know the 25 straight playoff years. It started in 91 going through last year. In that time, the Red Wings won four Stanley Cups, the 97-98 back-to-back. They also won an 02 and 08. Two other times, they went to the Stanley Cup Finals but were defeated. That was 95 and 09. They also had two other losses in the West Finals, 96 and 07. I bring that up because you add all that together, that's 8 out of the 25 seasons where not only are they in the playoffs, but they're at least making it to the conference final round or beyond. 16 100-point seasons, because as you know, Bob, of course, in hockey, it's not just simple wins and losses. Wins and losses and all that right. stuff work different ways. 16 of the 25 100-point seasons, 14 division titles, and then 6 President's Trophy, because hockey, of course, the NHL, you get something for finishing with the best regular season record. That's what the President's Trophy is. Wings won that 6 times. So it's an incredible streak. And the follow-up question, because I hear the
in
music
In other words,
play,
it wasn't just like they crept into the back end of the playoffs in all of those 25 years.
No,
that's the point. They were dominant.
Some dominating teams in that stretch. And it got me to the next question, because we all around here, Red Wings, that's pretty close, so that answers that question. Who do you think has the longest consecutive playoff appearance streak now that this one is done?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
It is now 20 because they've already clinched. The machine themselves, the San Antonio Spurs, will now be going to their 20th straight playoffs.
Very, very cool. Thanks, Jim. That really puts a lot of into perspective. Hey, the music's playing, but on our way out the door, I forgot I want to qualify you for our incredible Orlando flyaway offered right now from ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And 1065theticket.com. You and a guest can spend 4 days and 3 nights in Orlando, Florida. To qualify, all you got to do right now is register online at 1065theticket.com or be the fifth caller to 866-240-1065 right now, and we will qualify you for that grand prize giveaway where you will stay 3 nights at the beautiful Orlando Center Marriott, offer a world of possibilities. It's brought to you by it's brought to you by that Marriott, as well as the Legionnaire, Shea's Carpet, Premier, Vapor, Country Hearth, and, of course, Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. So be the fifth caller right now, and you'll be our first qualifier for this tremendous Orlando flyaway. That's all we've got today on the extravaganza, but stay where you are because Drive Time is coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.